you. It's good to be here. I'm going to sit down for a while and continue to do that. And again, I want to welcome each one of you. As was indicated, these are for three sessions. Basically, on the first session, it's to introduce the concept today. And the second one is Wednesday, is to get into it a little bit more about what you find in it. And then the third session is more, what do you do about it? And so I'm looking forward. I've presented on this subject before, but it's been either to people who are clinical people or to a group of pastors and a group of pastoral counselors. So this is an experience, and I've kind of reworked it, and hopefully it's meaningful in what we'll do. As you can tell, my voice is a little off. My two of the young ladies who live in the same are in the same chalet. I said I'm going to go down and get some apple juice, and maybe that'll help for this hour. And they said, what you need to put in apple juice is apple cider vinegar. Anybody ever heard of that?
Yes.
So this is my first try, and I went to the cafeteria and I found some apple cider vinegar, so I squirted a whole bunch in here while I'm going to be sipping on it. So if something happens in my voice miraculously, it has more to do with apple cider vinegar than anything. And feel free to ask questions as we move along. The first one, try to get a sense of who you are, and as I throw out terms or whatever, if you question what they mean or would like more explanation, please let me know. Our group is kind of mid-size, and there's a bunch of you who know each other really well, and I've had the privilege of meeting them already. But I would like to know who you are, just briefly, where you from, a little known fact about you. A little, it could be a big fact about you. You know, you're a mayor.
What?
And this is something, the next one may have something, what has brought you, has there been a life change? Basically within the last 12 months, but that's all right. Just use it. I mean, it's been a couple of years also. And life change could be certainly a significant loss. Or it could be a change of location, it could be a change of work, it could be a change of the way you do life. And if you could share that, I would appreciate it. If you don't feel like talking, that's fine too. How about on my right?
How did I pick this? John. My name's Larry Witt. I'm from Moab, Utah.
Can you hear him okay? Okay.
As are the next nine people around the front here.
Eight.
Yeah. Big and little known fact.
And you don't have to mention this. I mean, I just, if you say pass, that's fine.
Well, no, I'll pass to the biggest life change, which is 10 Mile Falls being a major hike for me. Which I'm discovering as I sit here in the last 12 minutes.
Okay, thanks.
I'm Connie from Moab, Utah. Big little fact. Everybody knows everything.
These people
just discounting.
Can you hear her okay?
Biggest change is kind of like his. I fell and broke my hip a year ago, and so an active life has changed somewhat. In trying to figure out where to push back and where to get to accept.
Thank you.
And I'm Dave, and I'm the former mayor of Moab, 30 years in local politics, and thank goodness I'm out of politics. I think the biggest change in my life has been I've been a hospice volunteer for almost the last year and a half, and I think that's really had an effect on my life for sure.
I congratulate each one of you. You're very brief and to the point. That's a skill. And answering the question. Thank you.
Learned how to run the meeting.
I'm Ann Marquardt, again, Moab. My biggest life change was when I was divorced in the last year.
I'm sorry.
I was divorced.
Divorced, okay, thank you.
And big and little known facts, I just don't think there's a whole lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your life is an open book.
Empty.
No. I'm Marilyn Stolfat. I'm from Moab as well. And biggest life change in the last 12 months or so has probably been a gradual change in my own body and just slowing down. That's really been the biggest thing.
Dave Stolfa of Moab. I was going to say the same thing. Physical changes that haven't been what I thought they were going to be.
I'm Melanie Sackerson from Moab, and my biggest life change is yet to come. I get to retire.
Oh, okay.
In a few years. I'm still working.
Okay, thanks.
That's what I'm looking for.
And I'm Lou from Moab. I guess I lost my sister, and then we moved to Moab the next year. So
okay.
Those were two really big things.
Yeah, really are. Thank you.
I'm Phil. Last 5 years from Moab, before that from Texas. There's a lot these people don't know about me, and I'm keeping it that way.
I'm telling them.
I truly and fully retired again in the last year. That's my big change.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
I'm Chris. I live in Las Vegas now. That's the big change in my last 12 months or so, moving there from Central Illinois. Not from Central Illinois, but we've been there 19 years.
Thank you.
I'm Jay, retired Lutheran pastor, still in harness a little bit part-time. Biggest change is I'm going blind faster than I like to think.
And, oh.
Driving up here was kind of depressing because it wasn't as pretty as it used to be. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. It is what it is. My prayer is to give me a sense of humor. And one of my friends said, "Your sense of humor could use prayer."
Oh. That's probably the best joke that's going to happen today, too. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Jim Kramer. I'm from Flanders, New Jersey. And my biggest life change is that I am now from Flanders, New Jersey, after being 21 years in St. Louis and 10 years working, and now I'm not working. So.
Okay. Thank you.
So
I'm Chris. I'm from Naperville, Illinois. And in the last year and a half, I retired, and my husband of 38 years said he didn't want to be married anymore.
Oh,
so
wow.
All that happened at once.
Yeah. Big changes. Yeah, thank you.
My name is Sharon, and I am from Olympia, Washington. I am a retired psychiatric nurse, and I think the biggest change was at a friend's house I fell down a flight of steps, and I don't move so well anymore.
Just FYI, my wife is a psychiatric nurse too, so you'll see her around. Yeah.
My name is Karen. I'm from Olympia, Washington. I first came up here in 1976, and now I'm up here carrying a cane. I've been coming for so long. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, in the back, our, but we'll go on the back and then we'll catch around here. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. My name's Jill. I'm from Cedar Rapids. I'm retired from there. My big and little known facts is after I graduated from college, I went to work for the FBI for 1 year. My biggest life change is doing hospice after that as an RN. Been doing that for over 20 years. Just retired from that just quickly a few weeks ago.
Thank you.
Well, my name's Stu, and I'm from Cedar Rapids as well. I'm a pastor. I think probably the big and little known fact among people here is that I'm from Canada originally.
A pianist?
Canada.
Oh, Canada. Huh.
Yeah. And if you talk to me for a while, you start hearing me saying A a lot.
Yeah.
But my biggest life change is I'm just on sabbatical. We're both on sabbatical right now. I've been pastoring at the church in Cedar Rapids for 8 years. And I started the sabbatical at the beginning of August.
I had a call to Cedar Rapids about 40 years ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. FYI. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Bill from Bellevue, Washington. And I guess a big fact is I just got back in the country from Lithuania, where I spent most of the summer teaching English, which was really a great experience. And I lost my father a little more than a year ago, and we also lost my wife's mother at 1 month apart, which was a little
bit. Wow, double whammy.
Yeah.
I'm Judy, Bill from Bellevue, Washington, so we have those two losses. I'm also in the process of retiring, so hopefully working on the next year, so.
Okay, thanks.
My name's Allison. I'm here from San Antonio, and I'm a college professor, and I've just been doing that for 3 years. So in the last 12 months, I've taken on a lot more administrative responsibilities at work, and I'm looking at applying for tenure, so that feels like a big life change.
I'm Kate. I'm from Canby, Oregon. And I am headed to Smith College in
Silver. I missed the last thing you said.
I'm starting college.
Oh, okay.
In just over a week. So that's definitely the biggest life thing.
Thank you. Yes, sir. In front of you.
Eugene Yan, originally from Taiwan. I came here in 1959. And then complete my graduate work. And I participated in the design of World Trade Center after my completion of my degrees from Lehigh University. Well, I don't have anything to report. The last 12 months, big change or a small one. I consider this a big blessing for me at this time of my life. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's good to have you here. Yes.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I am a divorce attorney, and I mercifully have not had any big changes, good or bad, in any recent time, and that's how I like it. But I obviously deal with people every day who are usually going through what is the biggest change in their lives. So.
Yeah.
A lot of exposure to it.
Thank you.
I'm Rebecca Yen, Eugene's wife, and your neighbor. We came from Bellevue, Washington State. Actually, we have been living in New Jersey, Northern Jersey, for the 3 years, and then moved to Bellevue 5 years ago, and it was really feel great to come here for this retreat. And in 12 months, I feel like maybe I'm getting old, but inside, a little bit younger.
Good to have you here.
Okay. I'm Sonia Zurich Simons, and I'm a double whammy comedian.
All right.
I left Houston, Texas in 1986, and I lost my life partner there with cancer, looking after him, and I recently remarried, and I moved back to Texas, and my new husband also lost his wife, so we nursed our spouses through
their
death, and then I lost my sister 2 years ago, and in the last 12 months or so, I went through cancer last year, major surgery, and I feel better today than I ever have in my entire life.
Well, my sense so far, and I haven't heard everybody, is that you could be teaching this. Go ahead.
I'm Ann, and I'm from Mount Vernon, Washington. And actually, 30th of July was the 10-year anniversary of a very big life change for me in terms of location and work, so I've been really mulling over that a lot this summer, like looking back and And so I'm remembering a life change from a long time ago, but it's pertinent.
Thank you. Yeah, Ed.
I'm Ed Corker from Newcastle, Washington. And the biggest change was I got a call from my wife, and she said, we won. What did we win? Oh, two little kittens. And that changed a little bit of the go-go. Go-go period of our track. The biggest fact I try and keep quiet is that I'm 5'4", and that affects my life frequently.
Thanks.
So my name is Carol Schneider. I'm married to Ed, and I live in Newcastle, Washington. I am now raising two kittens that are getting bigger than you can believe in quick order, but it's made it from us to a bigger family, and we're enjoying that. Biggest life change is that I retired just shy of a year ago, and I have been hoping to find new routine, and I was a nurse at Seattle Children's for 36 years, so it's a pretty big change.
Should say so. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Benny Kien. I live in Bozarts, Washington, which is right, I guess Bozarts, actually Bellevue surrounds Bozarts, so if you're familiar with the Bellevue area, like most of you are, you're probably not familiar with Bozarts. Biggest life change, I think there's two, where my wife and I are parents of two teenage boys. You probably have seen wandering around, not in the morning, but in the afternoon. And so just learning how to deal with some of those stressful teenage years is a big life change. And then my parents, Eugene and Rebecca, who were introduced earlier, having them move from New Jersey, where they spent 40 plus years, to Washington State, just a mile away from us, has been a life.
Yeah,
as
for
well,
sure.
So.
Yeah, thanks.
Are you going to be mayor?
I may be mayor at some future date.
Don't do it.
I will get some advice from former mayors. So, thank you.
My name is Eugenia Yan, and I'm married to Bennett, and my in-laws are on the other end of the bench there. Well, you said what our biggest life change was. I feel like with teenagers, it's just always changing, and I'm not waiting for it to get any bigger. It's always our younger one got a learner's permit. We didn't even look in the garage. We stayed with another dent in the car. But that's an ongoing big life change. And for me, like I think, like when do I go back to work? You know, been a homemaker for the last 15 years, and just trying to figure out when do I want to make this life change. I feel like I'm in good health, and I want to, but like it's daunting trying to get back in the workforce, you know, just after having been out for so long.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Evelyn Tai. I'm the sister of Bennett and my parents, Eugene and Rebecca. I am from Shanghai, China. That's where my husband and I and our kids, our one child lives now. But we were formerly from New York City. And I guess the biggest life change so far this year has been our second child went off to college. So now we have we're two-thirds empty nests. So we have one at home, and the other big change was I turned 50 this year, and I love being 50.
That's my favorite.
I find it very, very engaging, and I really appreciate everybody sharing a little bit about yourself. It gives from my perspective, it gives a connection to who's there, and learning about the diversity of folks who come up here. Location, history, all of that, a rich mixture for our time together today and the days ahead. This is part of my story. This is what brings us here primarily. Our two girls and their families are in Seattle, and these are the youngest grandchildren. That's Anna and her 3-month-old brother, Luke. And there is Adeline on the right, who you'll see running around with us, and her brother Dalton, who likes being a cat, I guess. Some of you have already answered that question, Wyatt Holden. How many of you, is this the first time you've been here? Oh, good half of you. Okay, it's my second time. First time I was like you, just a someone here to learn about it. And my wife has been here subsequently, and this brings me here for the second time. And what appealed to you about this particular workshop? If anybody would share a comment or two about that, I would be interested in it. Someone made the comment, before you answer that, someone made the comment, and I would agree with you. They asked for you to send your information about who you are, and you know, when you send that, who knows how they're going to package it together, and it could be too much information. Too much information, you see this picture, and so you make a decision. I don't know, there may be something, I'm from Texas originally, but I don't know if that would appeal to you if I had put down there I was from Texas. So you really don't know. And what appealed to you about this workshop?
I looked at your resume and went, wow.
Pardon?
I looked at your resume and went, wow.
Oh, you like my resume.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Careers.
I was interested in discerning about loss and grief and change, just dealing with it as intimately as I do every single day, and counseling people through the huge life changes that I work with them through, and just to have more tools to understand it and talk about it with people, the better equipped I am to help them through the process.
Yeah. That's something about my history that's informed the subject. My ministry has allowed me to be in different settings, including 10 years in the parish settings, and those of you who are pastors know that loss is a significant part of ministry. And I've also had the opportunity to be in the Army Reserve for many years, and I worked with vets, and after the Iraq War as a reservist, they kept me in the rear because I have some additional credentials and degrees. Working with families who had deployed soldiers, reservists, National Guard people, as well as the uncertainties of what they deal with. And also I was a chaplain in the VA setting for 7 years, which was a tremendous education because it was attached to a medical school in the Department of Psychiatry, and I was in the mental health side of the VA work. And was able to take a lot of the courses as such with the residents and inform me a lot about diagnosis, about treatment. And what planted me back into Florida was I wanted to wed the life of the church is in the parish. And I know that. And I wanted to wed that with my real interest in doing clinical work, doing pastoral counseling. So as a result, Lutheran Counseling Service came about. And there's some stories that go with each one, but that's a summary of, and each one of those settings, the people taught me more about loss. And they taught me more about, you know, in a psychiatric setting, in a psychiatric learning environment, in a hospital setting, in a field training exercise, as I listen to folks. My ministry started with all of my parishioners looked a lot like me, and they were basically, you know, they were all Lutheran. And it was a small church. Down the road was an Army Reserve Center in South Carolina that was primarily African-American. That began the story, and what evolved, and even with my work with developing the counseling service, it first started with 90% of the people that we worked with were from the Lutheran community, but it ended up with over 90% were from outside the community. And they brought, as in any large, this is in the Orlando area, any large metropolitan area, all the issues of life and relationships And as I listened to their stories and hopefully tried to help them deal more productively with that, they continued to teach me about what doesn't work and what does work in reference to dealing with loss, in reference to dealing with loss that may be unclear. And when I learned about Pauline Boss, it's got a rhyme there, Boss, Loss, she was a researcher in the University of Minnesota and did qualitative research and developed a concept around this term of ambiguous loss, which seemed, as I read her work and I attended one of her workshops, and I just didn't have words attached to it, but I had a lot of experiences. And my hunch is, as I listen to you today, is that you hopefully will find the same thing, is that, you know, in your own life story, your own life experience, that my goal would be to give you some terms. For obviously, it appears to me you have a lot of life skills, you have a lot of resilience there, and you wouldn't be here if you weren't open to new ideas. It's important to think, just a couple of thoughts I want to convey to begin with, is change itself doesn't necessarily equal loss. And I heard some of you talk about that. You talk about change in a real positive sense. Looking forward to, embracing, enjoying, that sort of thing. But loss involves change. So what happens is that there can often develop a sense of ambiguity of what takes place when we have change. There may be some loss attached to it, there may not be, and we'll be talking more about that as we move on. I always, when I do this sort of thing in settings like this, it's important for me to have a faith perspective in which to understand what the social science give us, what psychology has helped us to have a richer understanding of life. But I go back, what does Scripture have to say? There are many shades of meaning to the words change. Actually, there are 14 different variations of 9 Hebrew words that have been translated somewhat like change. And in Greek, maybe you can give us all the 5 words on top of your head. There are 5 words. There are 5 words. But what, and this is what's intriguing too, is that they have a diverse meanings. They can mean exchange, turn, to put or place, make other or alter, make anew, disguise oneself, pass away, renew, undo, make over, be transformed, repent, turn around. And these nuances are wonderful when you do scholarly work, but nuances can help us to both distinguish and define. On the other side of that, they can confuse us. And what has evolved with this term ambiguous loss, it helps us to wrap our arms around some life experiences possibly that before we just kind of lived with. But the reality of it all is that the now is different from the before. We attended, how many of you were here? We came on Saturday, and then Peg and her husband Chuck gave a presentation. You were here, Carolyn and Ed. And she started her presentation as Holden is changing. And she talked about the nature around it. She talked about certainly the fire has affected the change. And she wove into that the idea of change being part of life and how that is exemplified here at Holden. And then she said something like, expect to be changed. Expect to be changed at your time here. So hopefully I can contribute to that and give her a pat on the back when I see her again. And we have words of Scripture that can cause us to have certain presuppositions about change. For instance, in the Old Testament, in Malachi, I, the Lord, do not change. And from Hebrews, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And for me, I take a certain sense of security with that. I take a certain sense of groundedness, a certain sense of when stuff is swirling around me and bypassing me so much, that feels really good. And certainly on the familiar hymn, "On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand." And I think from a psychological perspective, this idea of trust, which is the first stage of development, and I see it taking place in with our three-month-old as his mother's life is totally devoted to him in nursing, that there is a sense when he cries, there's a response. Certainly he's pre-verbal, but thankfully there's something taking place that a sense of that the surroundings can be trusted. The surroundings can be trusted. And my own story of change has to deal with a lot that my wife and I are trying to decide about moving, buying a condo, equidistance between our two daughters. And those of you who are parents can understand why you don't want to be closer to one or the other, and it's your choice. equidistance, and have a condo so that when we're here, so that means we'll have to probably downsize where we're at. And there's just a lot of emotion, having been in the same place for 31 years. And a lot of it right now is ambiguous, but the more we talk about it, is that it becomes clearer. I think fundamentally inside of me, she wants to do it yesterday, and I'm more, how about tomorrow? And but more inside of me, there's a fundamental sense of trust and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful because a lot of people have helped contribute that in me. Certainly my parents, mentors in school, my own therapy that I did in preparation for what I did and continue to do. There's a sense of trust that is so important and so valuable. Now, how am I using the words change and loss? I'd like to have us consider that change is generally considered more gradual, less intense. It's more comfortable to talk about, less of an effect on how life is lived. Anybody care to comment on that or add to that or subtract from it?
Well, we'd say it's still loss, but it's gradual.
And loss is generally considered less gradual.
I think change can be loss or positive.
Sure.
I'm thinking when I went off to my first real job, you know, it was a huge change. At least as big a change as retirement. But it was exciting and new and what I knew I was supposed to be doing. And so I didn't have any sense of loss or...
It was positive.
Nothing bad about it.
Yeah.
No.
You,
I'm finally grown up.
Well, loss being is considered less gradual, more intense, not as much discussed, has more immediate effects, life-changing as such, and it often has positive or negative emotional attachments to it. This is an academic description.
I'm kind of struggling with change considered more gradual because, as an example, your family member leaves the house, gets in the car, drives away, gets killed in a car accident. That's obviously loss, but it also means change is happening right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of struggling with how changes. I mean, I can see how sometimes it's considered more gradual, but I think it can also be, when combined with loss and change can be immediate.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Just like that. Yeah. So I'm not sure how I like these definitions.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'd agree, especially in facing the possibility of death because of cancer.
I'm sorry, I can't.
I agree because, like, when you're facing the possibility of death from cancer, it is definitely a change, and there are prospective loss elements to it. But I don't think I could define them that.
Okay.
From the
okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Yeah.
I would just tie this into the ambiguity that you were talking about. In my professional experience, I think the thing people struggle with most is the unknown. And I think framing change is less necessarily negative because it is more gradual. The unknowns come a little more slowly, have a little more time to adapt to them and to have a sense of what's going to happen, to feel grounded in your own reality. Whereas loss is just like this drop off on a cliff. And I think that just heightens the sense of unknown and insecurity that comes with what's going to happen next for me, for my life, for other people and those things.
Thank you. Can you read that? If you can't. The physician is telling the patient, you should relax less. While he smokes his cigar. Now, we're going to take our conversation around loss and change. And I want you to consider loss that occurs without closure. Leaving a person with unanswered questions. Searching for answers. And because it doesn't have closure, it sometimes complicates adjustment to the actual life change.
Now,
yeah.
I just Carol. Can't help but thinking about something that happened to me at Holden here, probably in the late 1980s. We were having some, you know, medical ethic discussions or whatever, and in the course of all of that, they were talking about the loss that came with miscarriage and how so often that has been underplayed. People don't even know sometimes how to explain that this has happened or know if they even want to. And in the course of this discussion, a woman who had lost a child about 30, 35 years before, finally, after all of those years, could speak about it and what it was like to have had this child taken away from her, never to be seen again, in a stillborn situation. And I couldn't help but be impressed about or so devastated by the fact that after all of these years, she carried this loss and never felt that she had an opportunity to share that. And her emotion that bubbled out and came forth was so incredible. You knew this was nothing that she had ever been able to kind of come to grips with.
It's powerful stuff. Yeah. Yeah, words are inadequate vehicles to carry the weight of it. Did you want to say something? Okay. What are examples of loss without closure that are ambiguous and incomplete? Can you think of any?
Well, in this area, you know, the Pacific Crest Trail comes through, and every now and then hikers are lost, and then families are in an extremely ambiguous position of wondering if they're alive someplace or dead or lost on purpose, and they're usually pretty high profile. There's a lot of publicity around that. It's always really disturbing and easy to imagine how the families must feel not knowing what happened to someone.
It's the not knowing that's tough.
I think that almost any loss, at least initially, has lack of closure, is ambiguous and incomplete. I mean, I can't think of a loss where there isn't that minimal a what if or could it have been or some questioning and some soul searching at least.
Can you hear what she's saying? Okay, thank you. Well, you're bringing your life experiences, which is, thank you. Thank you for that. Any other examples of loss without closure?
I'm sorry.
Someone I know was talking about ambiguous loss being her son got into an accident and then lost a lot of his mental facilities. But he's still alive, but he's not the same person he used to be.
Alzheimer's is another example.
Suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Suicide.
Soldiers missing in action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our soldiers coming back different than how they went into battle.
Yeah.
Distinctively different.
Suicide as well.
Yeah, suicide. Well, say that again, then what you're
suicide.
Thinking.
You know, I mean, there's obviously no closure. Why? The question remains why.
We'll be getting into this more as we go along. How are these losses different from those with closure? And by closure, I mean death, funeral, gatherings. Yes?
I think one big difference is that with an unambiguous loss, other people know how to respond. There's a script for how to treat those who are left. And with the ambiguous loss, everyone is sort of groping for how to respond and how to react.
There's a sense of the culture has a lot to do with that, and different cultures manage it in somewhat different ways. I happen to be German. There's a lot of stiff upper lips. A lot of stiff upper lips. How are these losses different from those, and how are they unambiguous and complete? It was important for me to put dirt on the coffins of both of my parents. Mm-hmm. I hated it. On the one hand, but on the other hand, it was important to do.
I was called to the bedside of a dear uncle who had an aneurysm, and my whole childhood, when I walked out of church, he came right behind me from sitting from the other side, and then we shook hands. Now we would have hugged, but you know, that shaking of hands. And when I got called in Seattle that I needed to be back in the Twin Cities for this loss for which he was not going to recover, to walk into a calm ICU room, everything in place, even though I could look at the monitors and know how grim the situation was, the touch of that warm hand, still making that time to be able to touch that hand, has given me a kind of closure that I would never have had if that hadn't occurred.
You still remember it physically as well as intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else's comments about this? Question? I think that apple cider vinegar was helpful.
Yeah.
Some of you didn't hear me. My voice is horrible.
Liked it.
But yeah, I was advised to drink some apple cider vinegar with apple cider. So that's what. Credit where credit is due. Pauline Boss died a couple of years ago, but her book, Ambiguous Loss, has this quote that I'd like to share with you. Everyone experiences ambiguous loss, if only from breaking up with someone, or having aging parents, or kids leaving home, as we learn from the people who must cope with the more catastrophic situations of ambiguous loss. We learn how to tolerate the ambiguity in our own common losses in everyday life. And by catastrophic situations would involve the child who's left home and has not returned. I have a cousin who had an adopted son, got into drugs, and age 16, he left and never saw him again. And that's been 20, that's a catastrophic, ambiguous loss. So what Dr. Boss is saying, we learn from the people who must cope with the most catastrophic situations, we learn how to tolerate the ambiguity in our own common losses. And I find Ecclesiastes to be helpful in my own faith perspective and understanding or living with it. Possibly you're familiar with Ecclesiastes 3. The book of Ecclesiastes has the word vanity in it 40 times, and it's only 13 chapters. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Would somebody else read that? I think it'd do better than me.
Okay. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time for war and a time for peace.
Any reflections from you about this very familiar portion of Scripture, especially the first part, and how it may be applicable in our understanding of loss and change?
I think it to some extent normalizes it.
Normalizes it.
And puts it within a rhythm and a larger sphere.
Uh-huh.
I think of the yin-yang.
A yin-yang?
Complete circle of life.
Okay. Well, this is part of the wisdom literature, which also we have, like Book of Proverbs, and that give us a lot of sayings. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? How does the wisdom writer in Ecclesiastes present time? It says a time, a time, a time, a time. Such an understanding of time helps us, I believe, in our faith journey. And I think a hint here is that in the Old Testament, the Hebrew understanding of time is like a bowl to be filled. Whereas a Greek understanding of it is that it's a ruler or a measure. It's quantitative. It's qualitative versus quantitative. So, and maybe you've been around conversations where people say, well, man, that time has taken a long, it's taken long, or that's really short, whatever that is, and whatever it is. And that's giving a quantitative interpretation of time. And that quantitative interpretation of time, meaning a measurement. Thank goodness we have it, and 7 minutes I'll be letting you go. That's quantitative. That's quantitative. It's important to us. But from an emotional, spiritual perspective, understanding it from the Old Testament and from the Hebrews, I think can be more helpful. Of course, in bowls, what we have is that we have a mixture of ingredients that is a process. Is a process. We can add ingredients to the bowl that can mess up the process, that can cause the process to almost be aborted or to be confused. But a bowl is that place where the shape is continuing. And so I'd like to have you kind of take that with you to view time as we're talking about loss from that perspective. And from your own understanding of your own life experiences, what were present that helped in that mixture, of your life? What were the ingredients that were helpful? Conversely, there may have been some ingredients that weren't helpful. Okay. When you're 57 years old, I'd like to get that down a bit.
What supplement is that?
Our bowls of time are filled with ambiguous losses. So, what to expect when we have an ambiguous loss? It's unclear, it's not concrete, it can have different meanings. Others often do not see or give it the same meaning as we do. I don't know if we'll have time to do, we've got about 5 minutes, and can deal with any of these questions as a group rather than through the person next to you. We've already talked about changes that have become losses in your life. Well, some of this we've already done. Ambiguous losses are with us and those around us more than we realize. And this is kind of where I'm going to pick up on Wednesday. There are two types of ambiguous loss that we'll be spending more time examining. And this is kind of like a teaser as you leave. One is the ambiguous loss where that which is lost is physically absent but psychologically present. And the other one is where that is physically present but psychologically absent. Okay? Any other comments or questions? Thank you for your attention today and thank you for listening to my voice.
Thank you for using your voice.